Hey, we're going way off topic.
How would you like to have a great death scene? I laughed nervously and said, let's talk. It would make sense to go out gloriously. The closer I came to the day Spock was scheduled to die, the more a sense of ominous foreboding settled over me. The effect caught me totally by surprise. When I walked onto the set that fateful morning and saw the radiation chamber, which would be the instrument of Spock's death, I felt like a condemned man viewing the gas chamber for the first time. I wasn't the only one affected. The mood on the set was decidedly somber and hushed, as if out of reverence for the soon-to-be dead. But I knew the best way to get through this was to focus on the day's work.
You can't replace Leonard Nimoy.
Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah. I don't know who Nimoy is. That's what you just said.
He said Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, I don't know who the hell that is, but
it doesn't exist.
And just in case anyone. If he's out there, you're on my bucket list to meet. Leonard Nimoy had done that book on Jewish mythicism with
Nick Fetchit. Yeah, I remember that actually, yeah.
He came to Houston to do a book signing. And so I was by myself, had nothing to do, and I'm like, I want to go and just meet them. Like, this sounds funny, I don't really care about Star Trek, but from the Transformer movie where he played Galvatron's voice, I've always been a huge fan from that moment on. I love his voice. I love his voice. The dude has such
a
voice.
He has a wonderful voice and everything, but then you have to Transformers.
Well, no, I saw...
That's your frame of reference.
I've been such a big fan ever since you played Galvatron's voice in the new Transformer movies.
Something you'd like on an afternoon for like bus fare.
I'm telling you, you're close. We're about to kick you out of the podcast. That close.
Hey, dude, I'm keeping it real. No, I mean, I did see... What was the other movie I saw of him? It's not too long ago. Actually, what was that? Remember that old TV show that was like...
In Search Of?
In Search Of. Yeah. Where he did the voiceover, the narration?
Yeah.
That dude, he just has such a cool voice. My mom lately has been on a Fringe, like the TV show Fringe thing. We've been watching Fringe like every time she comes over. And he was great in Fringe.
I'm sorry. I got confused with Sliders for a minute there.
No, Fringe is the one where...
I know what you're talking about now. I didn't realize he was on that
show. Sliders? Oh, shit.
Yeah, I know, dude. You're going... That's way back, dude. That's...
Well, I thought you were taking guys with great voices, so I was going with John Rhys-Davies, who also has a great booming voice.
You mean John Rhys-Davies?
I have no idea.
He was in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, yeah. He's Grumly in Lord of the Rings, right?
Is he? I don't know. I watch those movies.
Yeah, Leonard Nimoy.
Did you meet him at this fucking thing?
Oh, no. Okay, so we went to this... I'm sorry. I didn't finish the story. So I go to this thing. He's signing autographs. He's in the building. I'm outside. I'm thinking, oh, this must be the line to get in. Okay, so I get in line, and I'm like, I'm just going to walk up and shake his hand. They said, well, there's a 200-person limit to go into the building. I'm like, all right.
Occupancy, probably.
Yeah, so I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, well, so what are we waiting for? And I'm like, oh, we're waiting for one person to come out so the next person can go in because people aren't leaving the building. There must have been like 400, 500 people outside the building just waiting to get in one at a fucking time because the people in there don't want to leave. So I'm sitting there. Eventually, he walked out the back door and I never got to see him. You couldn't even see him. But it was interesting. It was kind of cool. I was like, damn, I really wanted to meet him.
I'm wondering how many copies of the book of Jewish Mysticism he actually sold versus guys in rubber ears.
I was about to say, I would have been the guy, can you sign my rubber ears, sir? Not even that. Can you sign my Galvatron? Please sign my Galvatron.
At least that would be novel, I would think. Yeah. I would hope.
He seems like he has a really cool sense of humor. Now, I did watch a documentary about him, like where he started out as an actor. And
yeah, he was a serious actor and he became Spock.
Yeah.
So, and he got past it, but I'm sure there were a number of years there where he was really unhappy about how he ended up being Spock.
Every time I think of the Leonard Nimoy, I always think of the character from Galaxy Quest.
Right, Alan Rickman.
Alan Rickman. I'm just like, I can imagine him. Like, you know, Alan Rickman went out there and said, tell me some Spock stories. And they're like, he was such a bitter man. He was so full of rage.
Well, I mean, Trekkies love that movie because they see it as an accurate reflection of the individual actors who played those roles.
Really?
That's what I've heard anyway.
We watched it on Netflix. She loves it. She thought it was hilarious. I tried to explain it, but she's not into sci-fi that much, but she enjoyed it.
Well, it's a cute movie that stands on its own. It just helps if you have that meta-text involved in it as well.
Ooh, meta-text. Somebody's been going through a thesaurus again.
Thesaurus.
I knew that shit was coming. What? I knew that shit was coming. Old joke.
It's an old joke. Frank doesn't pronounce it thesaurus. He pronounces it thesaurus.
Thesaurus?
And when I asked him, what the fuck is a thesaurus? He's like, I don't believe in saying it thesaurus. It sounds like a goddamn dinosaur.
The machine sent a Terminator back to the time before the war to kill my mother, Sarah Connor.
Sir, let me save her.
What you're doing right now, this is the end of the war.
They can't even make good Terminator movies. Have you seen the scenes from that Terminator Genesis?
No,
that's or, I mean, not the scenes, but have you seen some of the images? Like,
no.
It looks real bad.
I was on
man.
Board with the last Terminator movie. I enjoyed it all the way up to the end when he gave away his heart. And I was like, oh, man. It was horrible, dude. That was the worst script ending.
You're talking about Salvation?
Yeah.
With Christian Bale? The movie sucked so bad.
No, the movie was pretty good.
Dude, that was decent.
The Terminator universe, the first half of it is not that bad. Even with him being a cyborg, and I thought it was going to be like he was trying to infiltrate, it seemed cool. I mean, for a sci-fi Terminator movie, it was fine. But it got to the end, and it was just horribly done. I mean, it made no sense to me. Even when they had the CG Arnold, I thought that was kind of a cool touch.
Let me put it this way. I didn't hate it while I was watching it. It had its moments. But overall, even from the very beginning, I was finding it disappointing. I'd say even 15 minutes into the movie, I was like, well, this isn't going to be one of the prizes in the canon.
Well, what did you think of Terminator 3?
And then the ending was just incredibly bad.
Yeah. No,
Terminator 3, I don't think that was that bad.
Terminator
3, actually.
I like the ending of it where you find out,
blow up the world.
I remember because I just finished watching that again for like the second, third time on a channel recently, and I never paid that much attention to the ending, and then I sat there and I was like, that's kind of cool. They made Skynet actually wireless. Like, she never really had, or it never had a body. I was like, that was kind of a cool idea. So I remember seeing that one, and then of course they showed the next one was Salvation, so I sat through Salvation, and like I said, it was a war cyborg movie all the way, but that ending was just, I mean, whoever wrote that ending just taking a bite and shot, but it was horribly done.
Well, you're talking about the third one. The third one had some pretty cool action sequences. I liked the Terminatrix. I liked the chase with the crane. There's a lot of cool stuff in there. And again, it did have your Planet of the Apes ending, where after the second one, they ended hopeful. It's like, yes, we can stop the apocalypse. And the third one's like, no, we just forestalled it.
Yeah.
Boom, boom. Where the fourth one, I didn't feel like it knew where it was going to go. I really don't remember that movie very well because I don't recall what impact anything that happened in that movie had in the mythos. It didn't go anywhere interesting. And Christian Bale was not particularly interesting as John Connor either.
Well, like I said, I personally enjoyed the first half of the movie. It's just that the final half was just horrible.
Kill white folks and they pay you for it? What's not to like? I like the way you die, boy.
He is a rambunctious sword, ain't he?
What's your name?
Django. The D is silent.
Dude, literally, I've watched Django like four times already.
It's such a good movie,
Django.
Right?
Django.
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 It's easily the best one since Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Easily.
Okay, so.
Did you read the graphic novel yet?
No, not yet. That's like my next read. I have to read. So I watched Pulp Fiction again because that's just...
By the way, I'm looking forward. Django Zorro is going to be coming out of Dynamic in the coming months. I'm totally getting that trade paper back. Well, I'm anxious because you realize Tarantino's actually helping to write that one.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll check yours out. So I watched Pulp Fiction.
With Matt Wagner, by the way.
Watched Reservoir Dogs because all this is on Netflix.
Yep.
Then I watched Kill Bill 1 and 2, which they still hold up.
I don't care for those movies.
Watched Jackie Brown. That was okay. I thought that was...
I like Jackie Brown better than
that was okay.
Kill Bill. Yeah.
And then what was and that was it. I guess that's what it.
Five Rooms?
Huh?
You throw in Five Rooms?
I saw that one. That's never held
up. The Robert Rodriguez one's the best part anyway.
Yeah, that one's never held up very well. So rewatched those like within the last few months.
What about Inglourious Bastards?
I'd have to rewatch that one.
I do not like Inglourious Bastards. I find it boring as fuck.
It's okay. Like I enjoy it. I own the movie. It's okay. It's not a fantastic, great movie. It's Tarantino at his normal. I mean, I still think he gets a lot of praise for a lot of ripping off other people's stuff, but Django, I have to give it to him, man. I watched it, and I don't want to like it. Kind of like
love it. I don't want to like it,
but it's just so well done. Yeah. I have to give it, especially when it's him and the dentist.
Doc.
Yeah, I really wish they had expanded that. I enjoy that story because it just his views on the culture. It's a good movie. So I've had Django on the brain.
It's such a great fucking movie, though.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
The only part I feel that kind of drags is when they're in on the plantation with DiCaprio's character. That sequence,
Monsieur Candy.
Yeah, that sequence runs a little longer than I could have done. That could have been trimmed up a little bit more.
That's where the movie goes very Tarantino, though. Like,
Tarantino, the worst, most indulgent aspects of Tarantino.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because up to then, it's a very solid, kind of really cool Western.
Very intense.
You can feel the gravity of the movie. But then at the end, yeah, it's very Tarantino. It's just like Looney Tune violence all of a sudden. Like, the Looney Tune violence comes out. Where he's like, tell Miss Cheryl goodbye. Bye, Miss Cheryl. Boom, and she like
no, I love that.
Blows
that,
through the room. I was like, okay, that's a little Looney Tunes.
That is the Hulk punching Thor of the Django movie. Now, it's her just flying backwards after getting shot. That was great.
Samuel Jackson has not had such a great character to play since.
Oh, he chewed the scenery, man.
Oh, I loved him in it.
He was awesome.
I mean, he hasn't been that great since Jules, man. In my mind, he hasn't been that great since Jules.
Man, I don't know, but it was a wonderful performance.
I remember I won't lie, I forgot at some points that was Samuel L. Jackson.
Like, that's what I was about to say, is that's like the first time in a long time where I could forget that I was watching Sam Jackson. I was just watching the character.
Yeah.
He just got absorbed into that role.
That he created, like, what was his name? Was it Otis? No. I can't remember his character's name now. That character, like, he created that character, and that creation had life. It wasn't Samuel Jackson playing a character. It was this character, and you're watching him.
Hated the shit out of that guy.
Oh, yeah, dude. It was a great movie. So, I'm sorry we're off topic.
We're way so off. So, we were talking Inhumans
Steven.
Versus
Steven.
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 Steven. Steven.
Fuck, man. It's just so much been there, done that. You know, it's Marvel is Nirvana and DC is Bush.
Oh my God, that was cold-blooded. Wow. That really works for me because I really have a deep hatred for Bush.
I actually kind of like Bush, but...
Glycerine, really?
Yeah.
Machine Head, really?
Greedy Fly is... you ever see the video for Greedy Fly?
I don't care.
It rocks, though, dude. It's really cool.
And that dude's married to Gwen Stefani. The world is not right.
Man, well, he's a pretty man. I can see where she would go that way. I had more respect for Gwen Stefani back in the day. The more I've been exposed to her, the more I find her just not fairly common in terms of her tastes and such. So she totally makes sense with a Gavin Rossdale.
Yeah, you kind of have... When she was first coming out with No Doubt, you were like, damn, like she's... like the head of a rather popular group and she's female and the music sounds different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nobody sounded like No Doubt.
They were the biggest band to have that ska influence that there ever was.
And her cadence was different and she was gorgeous, you know, and everything. But
as soon as she got married and she was happy, the songwriting just went...
Well, and then she went
like,
full
love
hip-hop.
Angel music, baby.
Well, and then she went... super cookie cutter hip hop with it, and it was just like, what?
I listened to Love Music, Love Angel Music Baby, and I listened to it ironically. I thought that she was joking. I thought that was a good, like, she was just going through the catalog of stuff that she liked as a kid, and she was just sort of remaking that, like her own version of that. And it wasn't until later I realized, no, she meant to make songs like that, and they're fucking empty and cheesy.
This shit is bananas.
Bananas.
Yeah. That's a legitimate song written by a legitimate songwriter.
That was actually about somebody too. I can't remember who it was about, but again, you know,
her.
The song's called Hollaback Girl. She's saying she's not a Hollaback Girl, and all she's doing in the song is hollering back. She doesn't really know who she is, really, does she?
Yeah,
is a Hollaback Girl.
But Nirvana though.
Or if you're British, then DC is Nirvana and Marvel is the Pixies. So just to fix that for you guys, I'll time correct that for you.
People hate Nirvana. Do you know that?
Who hates Nirvana?
Almost everybody hates Nirvana.
People hate. Well, is it because everybody's been wearing Nirvana shirts for the last 20 years? Is that what it is?
And they think that.
And they really only have two good albums and a few other cuts besides. And even there's one of their good albums is kind of only half good.
Everybody thinks that they only wrote one song and it Smells Like Teen Spirit. And that's just a damn shame. If the first song you think of when you hear Nirvana is Smells Like Teen Spirit, but you're missing out on a lot of really good music.
It is a pretty great song though.
He is a piece of shit. So tired of that song.
It's Snow in Bloom.
That song is so tired.
It's Snow in Bloom. It's No Lithium. It's No Heart-Shaped Box.
And Heart-Shaped Box, too, I can do without that song, too.
That is a fucking great song, man.
Serve the Servant, Senseless Apprentice. Oh, my God.
I'm not as big on Senseless Apprentice. I do like
Something,
Serve the
Something in the Way. These are
Something in the Way is one of the greats. Okay.
Amazing. Yeah. And there are people who have never heard Something in the Way, but they will tell you they've heard Smells Like Teen Spirit 1,000 times, and that makes me sad.
Well, but they won't tell you what Bush songs they like, probably.
Glycerine.
Well, okay. If you put Smells Like Teen Spirit against Glycerine, it becomes pretty sad. I mean, even more sad than it already was.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. So anyway, people have totally Nirvana. People like Nirvana, and this is another thing that we're going way off topic here. And this is going to sound really harsh, and we may not want to air this. And I think I've mentioned this with you before. How sad is it that Axl Rose didn't kill himself for OD?
That's what.
Can you imagine
how huge
Guns N' Roses would be now if he would have just died?
Yeah.
Instead, Guns N' Roses is a joke. People don't realize Guns N' Roses killed an entire genre of music. Guns N' Roses killed hair bands.
I would disagree with that. Nirvana killed the hair bands.
Nope, sir.
But Nirvana probably
grunge
never
killed thrash, and that was a damn shame.
Okay, you wouldn't have had Nirvana without Guns N' Roses, though, because Guns N' Roses is what brought rock music back to its bluesy roots, its hard rock roots. They were legit. They were great. People fucking loved them. And that push toward authenticity in the rock came from Guns N' Roses. Absolutely. Axl Rose probably should have jumped off of something. If he wanted to ensure his legacy, instead of looking like, did you ever see that footage of him? I think he's in a South American country where he's singing in a yellow raincoat and he looks like a couch.
He looks like a couch,
right?
Oh,
and the
boy.
Thing is, too, is he's wearing this plastic raincoat, and then he has his face, and just like, where did the plastic stop and the human flesh start?
Oh no, no, no! Like a bad cheap vinyl couch,
right? Right. Well, very, yeah. No, he actually looks like the old ladies who used to cover their couches in drapes and would never let you sit on them. He looked like one of those couches.
Oh,
he didn't look
Axl.
Like the couch so much as the covering of the couch while it was on the couch. With a red throw on one arm.
That's unfortunate. Whereas I think that Guns N' Roses, a lot of people don't like Nirvana.
I didn't like Nirvana initially, or I had issues with them initially.
There's still this legendary aura around Nirvana
because
Guns N' Roses doesn't have anymore.
What you got? See, that's the thing with Nirvana. As much as I like Nirvana,
no, it's because they George Costanza.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well,
Kurt Cobain left the room on top.
Right.
He said, "Thanks very much, everybody.
Good night." You're absolutely right. Because that's just it. I liked some Nirvana, but I really began to pay attention to them and appreciate them after he indebted himself. Honestly, there are a lot of other acts who have a stronger catalog. Or we have just more songs that I like than Nirvana. There's a lot of Nirvana songs that I fucking hate that I just don't want to listen to. There's whole albums by Nirvana that I don't want to fucking listen to. But The Highs Are Higher because of the context, because of how it made you feel in 1994 when you first heard that this guy had killed himself. And you thought about his wife grieving and his daughter being not orphaned, but, well, what do you call that, a half orphan?
Once removed widowed? I don't know. It's
and then you get all the fucked up shit with Tori Amos has professional widow singing about how Cobain was driven to suicide by the wife. And it's just like you end up with this great drama. There's your Inhumans movie. There's your Game of Thrones right there.
Oh, shit.
Where Axl Rose doesn't have that. What you have instead is slashes on fucking Talking Dead, occasionally mentioning what he likes about zombies.
Yeah. So. And they're asking questions like, would you wear the hat if you were in the zombie apocalypse?
Oh, you saw that one? Yeah, oh, God. That was
the
horrible
one I've actually... That girl I live with, make a note to edit that. Actually recorded that one, so we actually watched Talking
Dead. That was not a good example. Just to put it out there, because we've watched every episode of
Talking
Dead.
We've watched a couple of them, but...
That was one of among the worst. The worst episodes are always the ones with a lot of pretty people, or the ones with like musicians, because they don't talk good. They don't talk good.
/ want rock / not talk good.
Yeah.
See, what's another band that's? I think Stone Temple Pilots is still underrated.
Agreed.
I think Pearl Jam is overrated. I think.
Yeah, Pearl Jam kind of did the whole Grateful Dead thing, where they would just like tour continuously, and you'd get like jam heads who would like record every concert in every town and shit. So that became more of a phenomenon than a band to some degree.
And I don't.
But they've had several really great albums though. It's just I got tired of the sound.
I don't know where Alice in Chains is. Alice in Chains.
I think underrated.
Alice in Chains might be the best band of all of them. But Alice in Chains, just it never got the big radio play. They just never got big enough before the band. And I know they're still making music with the replacement dude. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't. I think that Alice in Chains might be the best band of all.
I have to admit that after listening to this music for all these years, I have a much easier time listening to an Alice in Chains album from beginning to end than pretty much any of the other ones we've talked about.
Yeah.
But we're fucking dating ourselves because we have not mentioned a band that was created before the 2000s. And for the most part, we're not even talking about bands that were still in existence before the year 2000.
Because most bands nowadays are one-hit wonders.
Yeah.
You don't get bands that make multiple albums and are popular anymore. They make one album and then that's it. And then they'll make a greatest hits album out of their own album. It's really weird how they do this kind of stuff now. But yeah, the music industry just generates one-hit wonders now.
Yeah.
They're not looking for a band.
It's all driven by iTunes downloads.
They're all copying other sounds. Hip hop's the worst. You'll have one guy come out with a different cadence, and I'm telling you, the next week you'll have five songs where all the hip hop artists and rappers are just using that same cadence. It's really bizarre how quickly they copy one song, and you'll have five singles out the next like 3 weeks, and they all sound exactly the same as the one song that got popular 3 or 4 weeks ago, because they can knock those things out because so much of it is just digitally produced. The beats and everything like that, it's all canned stuff. You're just arranging it differently and sometimes not arranging it differently.
Right.
Whereas, you know, a band has to go get into a studio with a, unless you're like Nickelback, and you've just got a freaking catalog of CDs and you just pop it in and you just sing the same stuff over it again.
I don't know if you saw, they had a slideshow where they showed all the bands that have come and gone since Nickelback, you know, in 2000, and the Tool was on the list, which isn't quite accurate, but it's like, it was mostly these awful one hit wonders. Like the guys who sang Butterfly.
Yeah.
Come my baby. Come.
Yeah.
And it's like for starters, these are not great bands to be in associated with, but also when you have music that is as dispassionate and as fabricated as Nickelback's.
And that's exactly, Nickelback is 100%, it's just fabricated hits.
When it's just a bunch of guys who are in there like, yeah, let's play another song like our last song, you know, and then I'm going to go fuck a groupie. Yeah, it's easy to keep that up. Yeah. There's no artistic pretensions there. There's no highs they're trying to reach.
And I'm going
to
say this, like, though.
Solidly samey.
I'm going to say this. It's not easy because not everybody does it. They've figured some Canadian fucks, dude. Just,
because they did not snort a lot of cocaine. They didn't go overboard with the booze and the cocaine.
It's just none of it's
so they're
genuine.
still functional. That's the whole thing. Yeah. Bands can do that kind of shit. You know, I mean, Bon Jovi and fucking Aerosmith are still putting out music. God help us. It's just being sober enough to actually get through the albums and the tours. And you'll continue to make that money. That's really what it comes down to, is being popular enough to where people will forgive you for when you completely bottom out, so that you can come back sober and continue to tour and produce albums that are similar to the shit that you did years before.
Yeah, it's you can just tell it's just but a lot of people like that stuff. They don't want.
Oh, Nickelback was an extremely popular band.
They want dumb music because they just want something to play in the background
right, that makes them feel all right.
Whereas, you know, in my opinion, we're dating ourselves again. I think that some of the shit that Alice in Chains. God, I'm fucking blanking on Alice in Chains lead singer.
Lane Staley.
Some of this shit Lane had some fucking demons, dude.
Yeah.
And you can hear that shit in that music. Kurt had some fucking demons, and you can hear that shit. The lead singer in Nickelback doesn't have demons.
One of his best songs is he's singing about doing a rail and getting a blowjob. It's like, that's not a demon. That's, you know, Saturday Night.
It's not. It's gross. Another band, I think Soundgarden, majorly overrated. Majorly overrated. A lot of that's because of Chris Cornell, because that motherfucker doesn't go away.
He doesn't age. Vampire mode.
Yeah, that's creepy too.
Yeah.
But yeah, Chris Cornell doesn't go away. People think that he's some... It's weird. Chris Cornell is some sort of weird, like, music god, and I don't know why. Like, I don't get... Chris Cornell's not successful, but he is successful.
I know that the girls always thought he was cute.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. Chris Cornell is a name in the music industry, but I don't know anybody who buys Chris Cornell albums.
No, Chris Cornell albums don't sell, but he's a good frontman for a band, because Audioslave had three good albums with him in the front of them.
Yeah, but...
He just can't do it on his own.
He can't do it on his own, so I don't understand why people think that he's like this...
Well, neither could Steve Perry, but he was still fucking Journey, man.
He's fucking Journey, man. See, man, he was fucking Journey. Yeah,
and Journey was the shit.
So anyway, I think Soundgarden did not have as many hits or as many good albums. Super Unknown was the only album, right?
Bad Motorfinger was all right. But Black Hole Sun is a fucking chore to listen to. Because they express the same thoughts through Fell on Black Days... And
amazing song,
which is an amazing fucking song, and The Day I Tried to Live,
amazing song, and both way better songs,
way better songs than Black Hole Sun, and yet that's the one. Matter of fact, there's a trailer out now, isn't there, that uses Black Hole Sun, like a slowed down gothy kind of version of it.
Yeah, and it's got some Lord sounding chick singing instead.
It might be Lord. Is that the fucking Mockingjay?
No, I don't.
Is that that? Is one that of the those. Song they're using for Mockingjay?
I don't know. No. It's not. Black hole sun, won't you come and wash away the rain? Black hole sun, won't you come? Won't you come? I remember the video is so terrible, but everyone's oh god dude, you see that video is so trippy, dude.
That was cutting edge visual effects. It was from what, 95?
It was, but I'll tell you right now, it's a good song.
I saw it actually when we went to Austin. I drug Paquita to they were running like digital projection. It was a crowd sing-along at a movie theater. And it was nothing but 90s stuff. And of course, it was nothing but the most obvious 90s stuff. So, of course, they had to have that song. So watching that projected on a screen makes you very aware of how far CGI has progressed in the last 20 years.
And here's another, man, we're going way off topic here. Here's another thing. How come Nine Inch Nails is still getting airplay if that music isn't actually as good as I remember it being? Like, why is Chris Cornell still putting out, you know what I mean? Like, in my opinion... That was like the end of the music industry were those bands. That's it. Mm-hmm. Then that's when you started getting into the MP3 era, one hit wonder stuff. Whereas like Tool sold out Toyota Center.
Yeah.
why is Tool selling out Toyota Center? It doesn't make sense. It's because
Tool,
yeah, because Tool
was supposed to be, yeah, Tool was always, when I was, you know, younger, they were like the inside band.
Yeah.
They weren't like people that, people didn't wear Tool shirts. Like, I see Tool shirts everywhere now. Yeah. And that band broke up almost 10 years, or they haven't released anything new in almost 10 years. But people are still wearing those shirts. But they still are passionate about that band.
And I still hear Schism and Sober. I still hear these songs played on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
So there's got to be something to that, that those songs are still being played. And I know it's probably our age group own cars and listening to the radio, I guess.
It's
so they're playing
also
to us. But
that, like, for instance, like Lady Gaga. I liked her first two albums, or I guess you'd call it one and a half, since one was like a extended re-release. And I like some of the stuff that Katy Perry's done. I like some of these, you know, big female acts, right? Well, it used to be those would be kind of the guilty pleasures. You'd want to be into a band like Tool, and you're like, yeah, I'm into Tool. But I really kind of like that song that Taylor Dane had. You know, it would just sort of be this guilty pleasure. But now, like, literally, you listen to one of those acts, and they're just better than everything else that's out right now, because everything else that's out right now and being promoted is kind of terrible. And you'd think that you'd have, in the age of MP3s, you'd think you'd have greater diversity. It's like, let's find a good catchy song that people want to listen to. But it's like, no, they just don't even try anymore. They just, like, if you got a proven person, they'll just throw out a bunch of music by that person, and then that's it. It's like they're not even trying to promote music anymore. They're not They're like, back in the 50s and 60s, you'd have all these acts where, you know, you wouldn't even be able to keep track of them. There'd be, you know, this person gets a hit and this person gets a hit. And there's all this variety. And now you would think you'd go back to that type of era. But no, they just keep pushing the crap. And at least the good poppy melodic crap is worth listening to. But they're not even trying to find anything actually interesting. It's like, I don't think that the music industry has yet figured out what to do in the MP3 era. So they're just not trying. They're so lazy. They just throw out whatever.
That's what I'm saying. And it's so easy for them to find a new one-hit wonder that it's just like, okay, well, we can let you go away because my email is completely flooded with shitty producers who have their next star, and I'll listen to five or six of these, and I'll find the catchiest one, and we'll release them and sell a shit ton of MP3s, and then you can go away, and I'll have got somebody else to take your spot.
But it's also,
you don't have to work as hard to find.
Well, but there's another thing too. I don't think they're trying to find new acts. I do think that the millennials have a greater appreciation for the culture of past generations than any other generation had, you know, for their predecessors. And I don't think they're trying to sell the new music. I think they're perfectly happy to sell the Beatles track for 99 cents. The millennials will buy that. They may not know this music that we know, but they know the hits, and they're buying those hits. So why go out and promote a new act when people will go and find that Nirvana track?
I think there's something to that, too. I wasn't necessarily thinking of the millennials. I'm thinking of little Timmy with his parents' iPhone 5S.
They
got handed down to him. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Which is why his favorite act's YouTube video has 1 billion hits, right? Mm. Because instead of downloading the MP3, he just listens to the video on YouTube over and over again. You know, so there's a market there that we're just not in tune to, because it's a piece of shit market. Get off my lawn. But so I think that they are. I think that the music industry is seeing so little return on them. They're just expending the least amount of energy to find them. And that works out perfectly fine, because any Joe Blow on the street can go buy a fucking mixer and a microphone and edit and produce a perfectly professional sounding piece of music and send it to a music label. I mean, it's so easy. That's what I'm saying. It's so easy to produce. You don't have to listen to some piece of shit mixtape that a band made and try and picture, okay, if we put them in an actual studio with a high-powered producer, could this work? You don't have to do that anymore, because any fucking asshole can make a perfectly crisp, clean sound, because the technology's just gotten there. So I think it's just so much easier to just build a nice little catalog of artists and then just throw them away as soon as you're done, and find a new catalog of artists and have them produce the exact same sounding shit. So I what I'm saying is, music sucks.
Well, it's like you mentioned Nine Inch Nails. Trent Reznor, when he did Pretty Hate Machine, you know, he pretty much did that himself. And it was considered an incredible accomplishment for him to do all that stuff where he's having to cut tape to make that shit happen. And today he kind of looks at his like the Nine Inch Nails stuff is kind of the junk, and he's really gotten hot for his soundtrack work now. He won a fucking Oscar for it, so yeah. I can't blame him for that. But again, he used to be he'd have to sit there and actually cut the fucking tape and do turn, you know, twist and turn and make this stuff happen and pull his production together in his little studio. Today, any asshole the computer can do the same thing. You can't recreate those times, but you also don't seem to have anybody out there who can continue with that. It's like you can't find somebody who can find that new sound and continue to produce that sound and be distinctive from everybody else. It's so easy to just copycat them that nobody's even seeming to try.
But that's gotten okay, and that's the problem. It's gotten okay.
Yeah, and it is a big problem because I'm sick to fucking death of hearing somebody pulling a sample off of a pop song from 20 years ago, looping that, and then trying to say that's a song.
Yeah.
This fucking Anaconda bullshit, for instance.
Yeah.
That is horrible.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
But they make $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking shame.
Well, it's great when you find something that was catchy, and then you just repeat the catchiest part, and numbskulls will fucking
It's really shitty. And it's not like we didn't, like you just said, you know, there are tons of samples in the music we used to listen to, but they had to put work in to do that shit. Like,
well, no,
Paul's Boutique was the same way. It was the fucking Dust Brothers and the Beastie Boys cutting up hundreds and hundreds of samples and taping them together to create these songs. And it's just, that was your Darwinism.
Because
people couldn't do that shit and they didn't have the patience to do that shit and they couldn't do it and make it work. Whereas now it's just so fucking easy to do it.
Well, no, it's not just that, because you could do that now and make some great music. There are two problems. One, I don't know if it went to the Supreme Court, but it was you can't just take those little samples anymore. Yeah. You got to actually pay every single fucking person. Which, when it comes to a tiny little snippet of audio, just doesn't seem fair. You'd think that fair use would come into play there. But also, they just don't have the imagination. It makes more sense to, instead of create a new piece of art, even if it's a portion of found art, it just makes more sense to take something that's already been successful and just loop it. It's safer. It's easier. Why go outside of the box?
Yeah, and I'd heard that criticism when Watch the Throne came out, which was the Jay-Z, Kanye West collaborative.
I will say, though, but just real quick, Kanye West, I still enjoy his work. As much as a horrible, just completely insufferable person as he seems to be, he actually can put out an album that I want to listen to.
Yeah, now he's a producer who is obviously very picky about it. You know, he sees himself as an artist. Yeah. He sees himself as an artist. He takes himself seriously. He doesn't want to make a bunch of shit that sounds like everybody else's shit. He wants to make the shit that other people copy, which is getting rarer and rarer. So in that respect, I absolutely do respect him. But what was their big hit? The video where they're riding around in the fucking Maybach that they chopped
the pieces. Yeah, I can't remember the name of that one.
I invented sweat, popping bottles, putting supermodels in the cab. Proof. I guess I got my swagger back.
Otis. Otis was one of the big songs off that album. So they sampled.
I was never going to remember that.
But they
Okay.
They copied. They copied one. Yeah. They copied one of Otis Redding's hits. It's like you didn't even go deep into Otis Redding's catalog.
Yeah.
You picked the hit that everybody knows.
The hit that everybody knows. It's like that or Sitting on the Dock of the Bay.
And that's the one you copy of and loop. So even in that respect, you pick the low-hanging fruit, and it's a shame. It's such a letdown when you hear shit like that, in my opinion. But none of this is going to make a podcast ever.
At least when he sampled Ray Charles, you know, he wasn't fucking Georgia On My Mind.
When did he...
Gold Digger.
Song? Oh, right. Yeah. So, see, that was a good one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was a great sample. I didn't even know that fucking song. He introduced me to that song. I have it now.
Retroactive. It's pretty cool.
Well, it's great when new music can introduce you to old music. It's a shame when all they do is repurpose old music.
And the famous old music that everybody knows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, don't fucking cover Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Sweet
child of mine. Man, you should have got me a fucking fluorescent yellow one so I could be like Axl Rose.
They didn't have fluorescent yellow one.
Do you think he has like a copy?
I would have bought a black one if they had a fluorescent yellow.
Do you think they have like a, he has like some sort of patent on that or something?
Sweet love of mine. Wow.